What's going on, everybody, and welcome to episode 7 of season 2 of Mental Dive, the podcast, The Psychology of Coaching. I'm your host, Taylor Staden, a provisional mental performance consultant with the Canadian Sports Psychology Association, helping athletes become more confident, resilient, play more consistently, and much, much more. On today's episode, I am so pumped to be joined by Dr. Adam Nichols. Dr. Nichols is a professor at the University of Hull over in the UK, and on today's episode, we really prioritize a conversation around how coaches can best support their athletes' mental health. So I really hope everyone enjoys today's episode, as I'm really looking forward to sharing it with you all today. Dr. Nichols, good morning. It's 20 past 5 here for me, 20 past 10 for you out in the UK. An absolute pleasure to have you on the Mental Dive podcast today. How are you doing?
Yeah, thank you very much for inviting me, Taylor. Really excited to speak to you today. You know, really looking forward to it.
Yeah, thank you. You know, it's funny. Before we started recording, we were exchanging it some details about what we've been watching on Amazon and Netflix. It's funny because I'm out in Canada and you were telling me you've been watching Leaf documentary. And I'm out here in Canada and you're in the UK. And I was actually watching the Manchester United documentary. So it's funny how we're kind of switching roles here a little bit, so to say.
Yeah, I just find it really interesting. I guess elite sport is elite sport and it's about the characters. And I just found it really interesting that the difference, I'm not familiar with ice hockey at all, but just to actually look at, you know, some of the uniqueness of the sport and the challenges that they face.
Yeah, thank you. What's one thing you noticed or stuck out to you as you're watching it?
I guess from my perspective, it was just the amount of games that were being played and the lack of rest in between games. So for example, in England, a very physical sport is rugby union, and they will play one match a week.
Yeah.
It seemed that they were playing, you know, I know the season was condensed due to COVID, but yeah, it seemed a very, very hectic schedule. And I was quite surprised by that, to be honest.
Yeah, no, it's a very tough schedule. Because typically in the NHL, you'd play 82 games in a season, but I believe that season they played 56, but it was more condensed. So it was really tough. But you even look at like Major League Baseball, where you play 164 games, I think is in the MLB a year, which is crazy. Plus you practice. And so, you know, you don't play every game necessarily, but the schedules are very, very hectic.
Yeah, I was just quite shocked. Yeah, you know, in terms of lack of recovery for athletes as well, both physically and mentally, it was just, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
How many times a week would they be playing then, typically?
In the NHL?
NHL, yeah.
Maybe 3 times a week on average, I'd say. Wow. Yeah, maybe 3 times. Some weeks you have 4 games. Some weeks you're lucky and you have 2 or so. But, you know, it's actually nice this year at the Olympics is that a lot of players are going to get a nice break for about 2 weeks from the season. So a lot of them will probably go on vacation with their families and get some much needed rest, both for their mental and physical well-being, as you say. So definitely really important. So Dr. Nichols, first and foremost, I would really love it if you could tell us all a bit about yourself and, you know, what exactly your why is. Like, what are you so passionate about and what brought you into the realm of sports psychology and coaching?
Yeah, so about myself then. So I'm a professor of sports psychology at the University of Hull here in the, I'll say the sunny old United Kingdom, but it's definitely not sunny outside today. and I've been conducting research the last nearly 20 years now. My PhD was in stress and coping among adolescent golfers who were affiliated with an international team. So I think I did research with both English, Scottish and Welsh golfers at some point. And then my research led into sort of stress and coping, just because I was really interested in about how we can help athletes cope more effectively with stress. And then in the last sort of 5-6 years, my research has moved into more anti-doping, developing anti-doping education for young athletes and also coaches as well.
Interesting. Okay. And so Dr. Nichols, the coach obviously plays a massive role in the athlete's well-being and development. And sometimes for the good, sometimes for the bad. When you think of some of the stressors that coaches tend to put on their athletes, what exactly comes to mind, whether intentional or unintentional on their behalf?
Yeah, so in addition to the research that I did on stress and coping with golfers, I've also conducted quite a few studies on stress and coping with professional rugby union players. And one thing that was apparent in across the different participants, whether they're young international adolescent golfers or professional rugby union players, and some of these, there's one study where we had a British and Irish Lions player, we had a New Zealand All Black in another study. So these were top end professional rugby union players. And the common theme was that coaches were a source of stress. Now, in particular, this could be criticism from a coach, so criticizing performance, knowing that a coach was observing, because in particularly more so in rugby union than golf, where rugby is a team sport, the coaches pick the players. They have the full choice of selection. So the players would know that during the week that they're competing for a position in their team. But knowing that if the coach was criticizing them or they were making mistakes and they were concerned about whether they will get selected or not, they were key aspects of what the coach would the stress that the coach would potentially cause. And we know that the coach have their role, the players were aware of that, but equally, if you're a professional rugby union player, your goal is to play on the start on a Saturday. Mm. And ultimately the coach can prevent that from occurring.
Right. Okay. And so I'm not too familiar with rugby union, however, would they be on non-guaranteed contracts where they can just be cut whenever the coach decides?
Right.
Because I know the NFL is like that.
It's interesting. Having spoke with, knowing the game itself, the contracts typically are 1 to 2 years, typically. So you do get the star player who might sign a 4 or 5 year contract. They're quite rare. And from speaking to players, you do hear that, if a club really wants to get rid of a player, they will send them out on loan. And there are things they can do. But the security is probably a little bit higher than an NHL player, but not much. And I'm assuming the wages will be a lot lower, particularly we have like two tiers of professional rugby union. We'll have the Premiership, which is tier one, and then tier two, which the salaries are very low.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Because when I was thinking of just the National Football League, I know that a lot of players are on non-guaranteed contracts. So if the worry there is that, and it's very similar to rugby union, where it's a very physical sport, is that if certain players were to disclose that they have an injury, they would worry that they would just lose their contract. So a lot of players play through injury and don't disclose those.
Yeah, right. And I suspect that'll be the same in rugby too, particularly if you're coming towards the end of a contract when you want a contract.
Yeah, absolutely. And so Dr. Nichols, as we both know, typically athletes are at a higher risk for developing, adverse mental health outcomes than the general population. Would you mind speaking a bit to that?
Yeah, so there's been some, research interest among mental health in athletes is that, I'd say it's probably a relatively new area of research. It's something that's gaining quite a lot of traction in the last sort of few years. So there's been several systematic reviews and meta-analysis. And the figures in terms of prevalence vary. So the key, I guess, mental health symptoms among athletes are things such as anxiety symptoms, depressive symptoms, eating disorders and gambling. And the meta-analysis by Reardon published in 2019 in Sports Medicine found that up to 36% of, 33.6% of athletes experienced either anxiety or depressive symptoms. That was by Guterich. So the meta-analysis by Reardon found that between 4 and 68% of athletes were experiencing some form of mental health issues. Four to 68% across different studies. So this was a meta-analysis.
Oh, okay.
And it's quite worrying. You'd think that, you see these athletes who physically they would appear to be in tip-top shape, when actually they could be hiding, quite severe mental health problems. Last year we published a study where we looked at mental health prevalence among professional rugby league players within the United Kingdom. And we found that the levels of mental health symptoms were far higher than the general population of the United Kingdom,
mm-hmm.
which in itself is, you know, it's you know, really worrying, really. And it shows that athletes are struggling at times, and some athletes are struggling massively with their own mental health.
Yeah. And I think where my mind goes when you speak to that is the fact that a lot of athletes are seen as superhuman, you know, by the general public, and that they do these incredible things in their sport. And, you know, a lot of times they're so physically fit and just active. And a lot of people would think, how could they ever mentally not be well? Would you mind speaking a bit to the idea of why athletes are more susceptible?
Susceptible. Yeah, I think. So at the moment, the research is about prevalence. And at the moment, it's not really gone into this why, but I've got, you know, having, you know, done some research myself and just got some ideas on potentially why. So generally, if you go to an individual goes to their doctor, GP, general practitioner with mental health symptoms, one of the first things they'll prescribe is exercise, or not prescribe it, but they'll say, "How are you exercising?" Exercise has been linked to superior mental health. However, one thing I suspect is that the amount of training that these athletes are doing, you know, we spoke about the NHL where they're playing 3 or 4 games a week, and that physical exertion can lead to an accumulation of stressors, an accumulation of physical stressors. We've done some research on that where we actually looked at activation, so how players are feeling, and also physical stressors with professional rugby union players over a 30-day period. And what we found is that they're experiencing low activation, so low levels of energy. They're feeling fatigued.
Mm.
And you think if you're constantly feeling that, exercise and training and competition will actually make that worse. And it could potentially contribute to the low mood. And I think that's something that we need to look at further. And then also you think about in particular sports where length of contracts are low, there's job insecurity, there's pressure to perform, pressure from the media, you know, social media now, I think, is a massive factor in all sports, really. And I think it's this accumulation of potential stressors that can really lead to some of these, you know, mental health issues, mental health symptoms among athletes.
Yeah. So Dr. Nichols, what I'm hearing here is that there's both internal and external stressors when it comes to why athletes might be more susceptible to potentially developing these mental health issues, so to say. So talk about pressure from the media, you talk about expectations, but, you know, as well, you talk about the physical exertion, and it's, you know, we go back to the NHL where you might play 3 or 4 games a week, but I also think that the lack of recovery that is sometimes prevalent too, because there's a lot of travel. You're not necessarily getting your REM sleep, and it's not consistent. You might be not sleeping in your own bed. And as we all know, whether it's backed by research or just anecdotal, we get our best sleeps in our own bed. So just even little things like that.
Yeah. So in 2011, when I published this study where we looked at activation and physical stressors, where we found that the players were in this low activation state, we then conducted a follow-up study to kind of explore the reasons why. So this wasn't exploring mental health per se, it was exploring some of the reasons why these players were struggling physically, and also, I guess, with some mental stressors as well. And we put that, the players attributed that through interviews to training volume, like you just mentioned, lack of recovery, the lack of rest on training days. It was just a whole wealth of issues that were contributing to this low activation state, which is essentially is kind of like a low mood, really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it, just like they say, this accumulation of factors, really.
Right. Okay. So when we think of the role of a coach now, in terms of, let's say they do have athletes who are experiencing low activation and low moods, what are some things that a coach could do to support this athlete, so to say?
Yeah. So I guess one of the first things to mention is about what a coach can and can't do in terms of, you know, they're not qualified, they're not trained to offer support for, I guess, low mood, which is a mental health symptom. However, I think it's really important that coaches have an understanding that, you know, if they're working in an elite setting, that, you know, there's a good chance that at least a third of their athletes may be experiencing some form of mental health symptoms, whether that's anxiety, depression, gambling, issues related to concussion, particularly in, you know, high contact sports. So what can they do? Well, I think first of all, they need to focus on creating a supportive environment, and an environment where they kind of destigmatize the issues surrounding mental health issues. So in terms of their language that they use, kind of being not using derogatory terms to describe individuals who may have a mental health illness. Just, I mean, generally, not focusing on a specific athlete, but just... Yeah. But and also encouraging athletes about the support structures that are available. So encouraging athletes, you know, how or informing athletes, you know, if you're experiencing issues with your mood, anxiety, the support that you can access, whether that's the club doctor, your own general practitioner, clinical psychologist, counseling psychologist, etc., and they're encouraging these athletes to make use of the support available. I think that's really, really important.
Right. Okay. So as a coach, you know, although they're not allowed to necessarily treat mental illnesses, and they can foster an environment of inclusivity, so to say, where they say, you know what, like, I'm in your corner if you are experiencing something like this, and I want to help you manage it. As well, I think my mind goes to the idea of being proactive as well, right? Where you don't have to just treat mental health when it gets really adverse or when you become ill. It's actually really important, as I'm sure you know, to, you know, maintain great mental well-being and balance, and that way you're less likely to develop a mental illness.
Yeah, so it's about promoting mental wealth, mental health.
Yeah.
I guess a key issue is that if, you know, you're my coach, I'm a player, my concerns would be if I come to you and say, yeah, I'm really struggling with anxiety, is you might not pick me for matches.
Yeah.
You know, you might not want to renew my contract. So from a coaching perspective, I think it's really important, again, to offer the advice. And I'm as a coach, I would say you don't need to come to me. You don't need to speak to me about this. However, if you are experiencing these symptoms, I think it's really good you speak to somebody.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're not suffering isolation with this. And ultimately, that will help the well-being of the athlete without the fear that what they may say to a coach might actually result in what they perceive as, you know, negative consequences, deselection, not getting a contract renewed, etc.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it is a minefield, isn't it? It really is a minefield, yeah. In the sense that as a coach, you'd want to help and support athletes, but equally, athletes may be scared to come to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And I think even extending beyond that, so going back to the NHL, there's a goaltender, his name is Robin Lehner. He's a Swedish goalie. And he's very, very open about his struggles with bipolar disorder. And he, right now, at this point in time, he's one of the best goalies in the NHL. However, he is really underpaid compared to his peers. And he attributes that to the fact that a lot of teams are hesitant to want to sign him because of his mental illness. So I think, although maybe an athlete isn't as so worried about their coach knowing about maybe their mental illness or what they're going through, perhaps they're worried about the overall system or sport, because if they switch teams, maybe other general managers or clubs would be less likely to want to select them. So maybe it's just like this overall culture of stigma per se.
Yeah, it's really interesting that, and it kind of think, you know, for this player, it's amazing that he's coming out and openly talking about his mental health. Then you can equally, you can see the reverse side of that, why players will be reluctant to do so. And I think that's one thing that's really important, is that we kind of remove those, you know, those stigmas around him, you know, mental health.
Yeah, absolutely. What would you say are some of the steps that coaches could take to help destigmatize mental health in their environments?
Yeah, so in terms of in their environments, it's really important that the language that they use, and don't use, you know, so-and-so's a nut job, you know, I mean, language like that, where they're being highly critical and using derogatory language of people who maybe have suffered a mental health problem. So always refrain from using that. And I guess just showing the athletes that they're there to support them, really. You know, developing the coach-athlete relationship, I think, is really important. Promoting positive relationships between teammates. So, for example, if as a player I'm not comfortable speaking to my coach about some issues I may have, you know that there is a good support structure among the players, in the sense that they can speak to each other and they can support each other and be a sounding board for each other, really. I think it's really important as well that coaches listen and acknowledge issues that their players may have.
Right.
And then equally, I think it depends on the ages of the athletes that you're working with. If you're working with young adolescent athletes, I think it's important really to involve the parents as well, getting them on board and so they understand what's going on. And as parents, you know, they're a key support mechanism for, you know, for young athletes.
Right. Absolutely. And so that's interesting. You bring in the role of the parents here too, if you're working with a minor, where although a coach may be supportive of mental health, perhaps the parents aren't very educated, so to say. So how could a coach manage this with bringing parents into the mix? Is that something that you think coaches should do right away if an athlete were to disclose a mental illness?
Yeah, I think certainly if they're underage, I think that's really important. And also they would need to kind of identify what support they're having. You know, if I'm just in terms of safeguarding, if I'm a coach and I'm working with under 15 team, and the athlete describes some severe symptoms of anxiety, which go above and beyond pre-competitive anxiety, they're more enduring, they're more severe, then I think first port of call is, as a sense of duty, is to speak to the parents about this and ultimately arrange, you know, for them to then kind of help find treatment for this, for their child. I think that's so important. I guess another issue as well is the extent to which coaches have an awareness of mental health issues. I think some coaches will, many won't know. And I don't think it's something that appears in many coach education programs, particularly at entry level, you know, levels 1 and 2 to coaching programs, where, you know, the vast majority of coaches will be working. I think at elite levels, where there's often psychologists working in the teams, doctors, I think there'll be much more awareness of mental health issues at the elite level.
Right, absolutely. Dr. Nichols, would you mind speaking a bit to the idea that having strong mental health drives performance?
I think certainly, if you're participating in sport with a mental health issue, it's not going to help your performance. It's going to be, if you look at some of the symptoms of anxiety, so being distracted, which links into not being able to concentrate, all the physiological symptoms, they're not ideal performance states, should we say. So linking mental health, so positive mental health, will, you think about, you know, getting into flow states, being able to cope with stress, viewing situations as a challenge as opposed to a threat. These are all linked to superior performance. So there will be it's not to say that some athletes won't be able to perform well with mental health symptoms because they will be able to, but generally it's not really conducive to performance.
Right. Yeah. And perhaps they're not, they won't be able to perform at the level they could be performing at if they were to have, you know, superior mental health.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And just going back to some of these other strategies, I think, you know, we've mentioned this before, but it's really important that particularly in, well, I guess not particularly, but in all sports, but in those which are physically demanding and psychologically demanding, that athletes are given time by their coach to recover in between sessions, recover in between matches, to consider the training load of athletes, so ensuring that athletes are not burning out. Reardon in their match analysis also gave some interesting suggestions. They said about celebrating achievement. So as a coach, if your team do well, and not necessarily if the team performs well, but also if individuals kind of fulfill their potential, they make improvements, that those effort and improvements are celebrated. As a coach, how can we give more autonomy to players, in the sense that what can we do to help players give more sense of control over what they're doing, whether that's training, it could be issues around competing. So, for example, when we travel, how they travel, just so the players have more of a positive say. And we've also touched upon these positive relationships, but I think it's really important that where possible, these relationships between teammates are actively encouraged and supported by coaches.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What is an example of a way a coach could celebrate a player, you think? Like, what's a really practical way a coach could do that, you think? Do you think it could be something really small? Does it have to be something more grandiose? Or?
I think, again, it really depends upon the level of athlete that you work with, the age of the athlete. So, for example, if you're working with young athletes, recreational level, just even having a reward of the week, a certificate, player of the week, the hardest trier of the week. Just something like that, getting the players out in front of their teammates. So I'd like to say well done to such and such a player for the amount of effort they've put in this week, and have these regular awards. I know, you know, some of the sports I've been involved in, they seem to go down quite well with children. Having an 8-year-old myself, I know he loves getting awards like this when he's at school and when he's playing sport. They love this sort of thing. And I think it just gives them encouragement. It can give them motivation to want to, you know, to continue trying hard. I guess as you go up the levels, perhaps, you know, you might not necessarily give out some certificates if you're working with elite athletes, but I still think it's important to have a player of the week, a player of the month, you know, and but also explaining why this player has been awarded this player of the month. What is it that they're doing? It could be their attitude, it could be the amount of effort they've put in, it could be a combination of both. And I think it's really important. And again, as a coach, you know, you speak to players, you know, you've improved this and this of your game. It's really good that you're working on this and you've improved this. Just letting players know that, your work, you're observing them and you're proud of them and you're celebrating the what they've done.
Yeah, for sure. And what I really like about that, Dr. Nichols, is it when you, like, just giving out certificates per se, like, I know growing up on some of my teams, everyone got a certificate. I actually caught on and it just went by the number on our jersey. So number one, we get the first week, number two, so, or by games. So I kind of caught on. I was like, but what I like about what you said there is the fact that you want to explain why this certain player is getting a certificate, because I feel like that just helps athletes feel noticed. You know, when you can speak to specific things or maybe point out something that an athlete maybe didn't think you noticed, but perhaps they've been working really hard and you give a specific detail that just shows that they're being noticed and that their efforts are being praised. You know, like I really, really like that.
Yeah, that's really a really interesting point you just made about your own experience. So what the research has found, I think it's something like children under 10. Don't distinguish that. But however, if you work with athletes between 10 and 12, and if you reward everyone, then actually it can be a demotivating effect.
Really?
Yeah. So younger kids don't pick up on this, but older children do. And if, like you say, you're everyone's getting their certificate week on week, then actually it's not really going to motivate people. So yes, that's really, it's really interesting that you experienced that, and the need to kind of identify, like say, why they've been awarded these certificates or what it is. And I guess make it different each week. You know, again, you know, one week you might give someone a certificate for attitude and explain why their attitude was good, what they did. Another week it might be for somebody who's developed and worked on a particular skill and executed that well within a match or within training. So that these awards are much more specialized and specific to the player.
So, Dr. Nichols, could you please tell us about your book that recently came out, all about the psychology of coaching?
Yeah, so with my research, I was aware that coaches can be a real source of help for athletes, but actually there's very little in coach education for them. But there's probably, you know, a lot that they can do. So, you know, I worked on the book. We're now on the third edition of it. It's Psychology and Sports Coaching, Theory and Practice. The new edition's just come out, and it's a real practical guide for how coaches can use some psychological strategies to underpin what they do. So it's not about them necessarily. You know, we know that they can't treat athletes per se, but there's lots of things they can do in terms of the environment, creating a really good environment, using psychology to underpin how they coach. So in terms of feedback, instructional practices, informational, if they're coaching athletes with learning disabilities, strategies that they can employ. So it's quite a broad book, really, covering lots of topics, so mental health in athletes, differences, nuances between coaching children and adolescents, how you would build team cohesion, how you would develop athletes. It's quite a broad brush, really, of quite a few different chapters, which are all evidence-based, theory-based, but actually are trying to include lots of practical information in there.
Awesome. Fantastic. Thank you so much. And what was the name of the book?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, it's Psychology and Sports Coaching, Theory and Practice. It's published by Routledge, and the third edition is only been out now for, I think, about a month or so. So it's just been published.
Oh, wow. Fresh off the press. Congratulations. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, so all the research in there will be quite up to date at the moment.
Perfect. And is this available on Amazon, or where can
Available find on it? Amazon. Yeah, available on most book sites. And it's available as a paperback and also as an ebook as well.
Awesome. Perfect. I'll put a link to the book on Amazon in the description of the podcast for easy access. So if anyone listening wants to go check it out, please do click the link. So Dr. Nichols, I'm very conscious of your time, and I really appreciate you coming on to speak a bit about the role of the coach in supporting their athletes' mental health. It's been a great conversation. I feel like there's been a lot of really great takeaways. If you could point out one takeaway in particular you'd want coaches to have, what would it be and why?
Yeah, my takeaway would be about being sympathetic to the needs that other people have. As a coach, you might not have ever experienced any mental health symptoms yourself, but equally, it's about understanding your players and understanding that people can have mental health problems, and that don't view that negatively. And actually, with treatment, you know, most people with mental health symptoms do get better and will get better. And just being, I guess, supportive of athletes, really. That's my main, the main goal that I have, or the main point, really.
Perfect. Awesome. Thank you so much. Well, Dr. Nichols, take care. Wishing you and your family all the best, and enjoy the rest of the All or Nothing series on Amazon. I'll be watching the Manchester United one with Fergie and them. So,
okay. Cheers, then, Taylor. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Nichols.
So that wraps it up for episode 7 of season 2 of Mental Dive, the podcast. With that being said, it actually also wraps up this season. First and foremost, I just want to thank everybody so much for tuning in and listening to all these conversations I had the pleasure of taking part in. I know that I learned a ton throughout this season, and I hope that you all took away at least one thing from the 7 episodes. That being said, I do have a special announcement that will be coming in the next few weeks regarding a event that will be happening to wrap up this season. So stay tuned for that. You can
check it out on Instagram, Twitter, at Taylor Staden. That's at TaylorStaden. If you're part of my email list, I'll also be announcing it on there as well. So if you're not, I do recommend you go down to the very bottom of the description of this podcast and go sign up for email updates so you can stay tuned on this news. I'm sure you all will really enjoy it. Anyways, everybody, take care. Again, thank you so much for tuning in, and I'm looking forward to sharing another season with you all soon. Until then.